Time Grenade, episode 360. I'm your host, Hector. And on this episode, we have Jason back. And so it's a standard classic episode of the podcast. Jason and I start off talking about the 10-year anniversary of Mind Grenade, which is coming up pretty soon. Great doing the podcast with Jason, with Ian. Ian can't be on this episode, but we look forward to having him back on soon. And on this Mind Grenade, we do a 2024 in film preview, where we highlight the films we're excited about this year premiering in theaters. But before that, we do a Crossing the Streams, which is our recommendation segment on the podcast. So you have that to look forward to. I wanted to say thanks for subscribing, thanks for listening and supporting us over the years. It means a lot to us. Without further ado, enjoy this episode of the show. Memory from 2010.
Yeah.
Says, man, if they dump Conan, I'm going to have to ban the entire network from my TV and DVR, which sucks because I love watching The Office and Community. Just glad Lost isn't on NBC. Man, that's so, that's fucking.
It's dated. Yeah.
It's a time capsule for sure. This year will be 10 years of Mind Grenade in May. I was looking through all my the podcasts that I listen to, and I even still have like Dork Trek on there, which is Dennis's and Jenny Zell's podcast that I listened to for like about 10 years. But I was just going through, I was like, man, like podcasts that I've like picked up over the years to listen to and became fans of, and then the ones I just kind of like. Like Dork Trek just kind of, I mean, 10 years is pretty fucking good for them. Like, I've been listening to, the guys from Workaholics, which is one of my favorite ones. Mm-hmm. The guys from It's Always Sunny have a good one, but they kind of went into, they took a break because of the strike, I think.
The writer's strike.
That one was good too because they were going
episode by episode.
Yes, which is fun because then you can kind of go back and be, oh, I remember that episode of It's Always Sunny. And then the guys from Workaholics, and it's just funny how it's funny how formats people's, you know, like the guys from the Workaholics, it's just them shooting the shit. And I was like, How are they making that work? Because if there's not like they're just sitting down and just shooting the shit and it works, like one of my favorite ones. It's just they've pretty much captured what their writer's room was on Workaholics, a TV show, and just like encapsulated into a podcast.
Okay,
so yeah, so it worked. But they recently went on tour with the podcast. Which again was like, oh man, I hope this works for these guys. And it worked. Like they went fucking all over the country. And I listened to those episodes and it was just as good as their in studio. You never know. Like it could have just gone off the rails on stage or the audio could have been bad or, I mean, a number of things. Right, yeah. But that one's really good, man. I highly recommend anybody who's just into comedy, that type of comedy, because it's kind of raunchy, but it's fun and well-intentioned. The guys are like sweet guys. They're not like assholes. One of the guys from Workaholics, Anders, the tall blonde, he's in that show, Monsterverse show, that Monarch Legacy of Monsters Apple. But he plays a young John Goodman. So John Goodman was on Skull Island, the movie.
Right.
Which took place in the 70s, I think in the 70s, 60s, 70s, somewhere in there.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, it's definitely a period piece.
Right, it is, yeah.
But so Anders Holm, who you've seen in other movies too, but he was from Workaholics. he plays a young John Goodman, and he's actually pretty good. He's not necessarily known for being a dramatic actor, comedian.
Right, right, yeah.
But, yeah, I had to get caught up on Monarch because I jumped off, like, two or three episodes in. It's the one with Kurt Russell and his son.
His son playing the younger version of him.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been listening to, again, with the podcast, I've been listening to both of them doing interviews on podcasts, and that's entertaining. I just wanted to start off this recording with my love of podcasts since we were hitting 10 years.
Yeah.
And it's a better format, I think, for promoting TV shows and movies. Because when you go on Jimmy Kimmel or Jimmy Fallon or any of the Jimmys, the TV shows, you're on there for like 10 minutes or whatever it is. And you kind of have to like get all the, like, come off as charming and also sell your product and then move along. On a podcast, you get an hour and you can really get to like get either charmed by a celebrity or whoever's trying to sell you something or just find out you're not that interested in it. Yeah.
It feels a little more real.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, right. It's more of an organic conversation. Yeah, yeah, for sure. You know, let's see. I do have some stuff prepared for us here.
Okay.
But it's really, I'll tease the this episode. I want to thank everybody for subscribing and thanks for tuning in for all these years. And for this episode, we're going to do a 2024 movie preview. I'm just going to go down like a list of the stuff I have that I want to go see in the movie theater this year. So I'm not going to go down every movie release this year, but just the highlights of the stuff that we might be interested in. But before all that, we're going to get into some Crossing the Streams, which is our recommendation section here on the podcast where we recommend. It's Crossing the Streams because it's anything streaming, right? Like, so music, TV shows, anything we can get off the internet on our phones or on a Roku or off our Xbox or anything like that. So, you know, Jason, it's been a while since you've been on, since we've gotten together for this. So I'll let you kick it off with our recommendations.
Okay. Yeah, sure. So I watched Equalizer 3 with Denzel Washington.
Fuck yeah.
The first two, I mean, revenge movies are always good. They don't get old, I should say. And when they have like a legit plot to them, like revenge action movies, they're always great. When they don't have a plot to them, they're just kind of, they can get dumb. But when they have a plot to them, always fun to watch, especially when your action sequences are good. Now, I liked Equalizer 1 and 2, but you know, when you get into the third and fourth and fifth movies of franchises, you're like, you know, is this going to be? So I went in and I was like, you know, I've got a couple hours. Like I liked the first two. I bet Denzel Washington Equalizer, this franchise, I had faith that this will at least be decent, but it exceeded my expectations.
Sweet.
Yeah, it's a really good movie. The entire plot of this one actually takes place overseas, between Sicily and Italy.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's a different location for him, piece two. And man, it's so well done. And it really kicks the action off right away. Where Denzel gets to be a badass just right out the gate. But then it kind of reels itself back into developing the plot and the people in the town that he's in and stuff like that. And it does such a good job in the third movie. I was impressed. I was really impressed for a third Equalizer because I was going into it and I was like, what are they going to do now? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I didn't know, but they really came up with something unique and I thought it worked really well. So yeah, man, that definitely, it was Netflix, I believe, that I watched that on. Yeah.
Yep.
So yeah, definitely. If you like the first two, absolutely watch the third one, because I think the third one might actually be better than the second one.
Yeah, it's usually not the case with sequels. Yeah.
So it's been a while since I've seen the second one, but I don't remember being that impressed by the second one as I was by the third one.
I think the second one had Pedro Pascal, I think, was like, I confused the first one and the second one because it's been a while since I've watched them. Anton Fuqua, I think, is the director's name, who did Training Day with Denzel.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's why they got it. It's a good director-actor team. Also, The Equalizer, it's a brand that was from a TV show in the 80s. So you're like, what are they gonna, you know, it's like, okay. But no, they made a great franchise out of it. I think one of the either the first one or the second one has Pedro Pascal as like an old military buddy of Denzel's that kind of they turn mercenary. So then he's got to go in and like fight these guys. And then he like brutally kills them. And he tells them to.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Which is pretty, it's very, you know. I mean, Denzel pulls it off is the thing. Like you believe
him. Oh, yeah,
100%.
Yeah.
He's great. Yeah. So I've not watched the third one yet, but I did see it pop up on Netflix.
Yeah. And with Denzel, you know, you got, and, you know, I don't want to trope action stars into saying that they're not, most of them aren't good actors, but Denzel's got a lot of depth. Like, oh, yeah. He can bring out, like, he can really sell you on a character. There's a lot of things he can do that not necessarily every action star can do. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, so you can do more with the plot and the evolution of his character and the people that are surrounding that character when you have a Denzel Washington in your action movie. And it really showed in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
He's getting up there, I think, now. I don't know how old he is now, but
yeah,
I could. That's one of the first things I kind of noticed when he got on screen. I was like, oh, Denzel's looking a little older, but I mean, it didn't take away from the movie. I mean, he did awesome. Like, I mean, could have been 40 and still, yeah.
Yeah,
I mean,
this is a little mind blowing. He's 69 years old.
69.
Like he's essentially 70, which is insane when you think about like being an action star. Yeah, awesome. Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to watching that. So, speaking of Netflix, I finished up watching, we talked about it a little bit when we were last on, was that Scott Pilgrim Takes Off. That exceeded my expectations too. I really enjoyed it. It's got the entire cast of the movie of the Edgar Wright film that came out 10, 15 years ago. So Michael Cera, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, Kieran Culkin, who just won a Golden Globe for Succession. Kieran Culkin.
Okay.
Which I've not watched that show, but I've only heard awesome shit.
Same here, yeah.
Yeah. Chris Evans is like underrated as a comedic kind of actor. But he's great in the Scott Pilgrim stuff. He's great in this and this anime. Brie Larson is also good in this. I know she gets a lot of shit for kind of being wooden and some stuff. But Allison Pill, Aubrey Plaza, Jason Schwartzman. And the addition to Scott Pilgrim takes off the Brian Lee O'Malley anime on Netflix is that they added Will Forte as an older Scott Pilgrim because Michael Cera plays the young Scott Pilgrim, but Will Forte, you always forget how fucking hilarious Will Forte is. I had forgotten about this, but he would come on Conan when Conan had his show on TBS, and TBS, I guess, was owned or is owned by Turner Classic, not Turner Classic Movies. What's I forget who that tycoon is. His last name is Turner. But Will Forte would come on, he'd get pulled out atop a stuffed buffalo and he'd play, Ted Turner. He'd play like a exaggerated version of Ted Turner.
Okay.
And he'd come out and he'd just like start berating the audience as like a bunch of stoner, Cheeto eating slackers. And Will Forte is like hilarious, man. Like people forget he's like quietly one of the funnier people that came out of SNL. And in this show, in Scott Pilgrim Takes Off, he is, I mean, he for me kind of stole the show, and I was already, you know, into it. But I'm wondering though if like I think if you're a fan of the Scott Pilgrim comic book, the movie, then this is another great addition to the whole thing. If you're not familiar at all, I'm not sure. I can't tell. I'm too close to it to tell if somebody just coming in cold. Just I don't know.
I haven't watched it yet, but I hear it kind of rehashes the movie a little bit in the beginning.
A little bit, yeah. Both the comic and the movie, but it's its own thing too.
Yeah. So like, so it wouldn't be like a requirement to watch the movie to enjoy the
right.
show because it kind of does it for you in the beginning. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I was told.
So a very interesting approach to it. They could have just rehashed the movie or the comic. But it's like a remixed version of it, and I really enjoyed it. I'm glad they went ahead and did it. And when I call it an anime, it really leans into anime tropes. Like the intro reminds me of, like, I don't know, some of the animes that are already on Netflix that were imported from Japan. So high recommendation for anybody who loves Scott Pilgrim and Edgar Wright. So that's my recommendation for my Netflix recommendation.
Nice. Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah. And isn't Blue Eye Samurai on Netflix as well? Now I'm hearing some great things about that. And then I think we mentioned it before. We're going to restart Listen Impossible. We're going to do some pop culture stuff. And then Matt has been pushing me to watch that for that show. So I'm looking forward to watch that. I haven't started that one yet, but looking forward to that one for sure. Mm-hmm. So, I'll switch gear. We've done a show and a movie. How about a documentary?
Yeah.
So, World War II from the front lines. I believe this is actually, is it not Netflix too? Boy, I should have wrote that down. I'm pretty sure I watched this on Netflix as well. John Boyega is the narrator for this. So this is pretty much all footage, like actual real footage from the war. So there's not like how some documentaries will kind of re-dramatize things for you. Mm-hmm. This entire thing is live footage they've taken from the war, and they've cleaned it up the best they can. They've colorized it, they cleaned it up, and they've made it look good. And most of it, John Boyega is describing what's going on during this World War II documentary, but what's cool about this is a lot of it is actually interviews they've accumulated from people that were in the war, and they just don't do like American soldiers. So they'll be talking about a period in the war, and you'll literally get a German soldier that's translated talking about the war. You may get a French citizen that was in the town during this time. Mm-hmm. You'll get an American soldier. You'll get a Russian soldier. Like, they keep angling it. So you really get the viewpoints of everyone. And they talk about in Japan, like the pilots, you get to talk, like a pilot will come on and talk to you and tell you what they were afraid of, what they were being told, like what their mindset was during this time going into the battle, like what their superior officers were telling them. So it really gives you a lot of perspective.
Yeah.
And plus this like really cleaned up footage. So I think it really, if you like World War II, I think it really brings a lot to the table. I enjoyed it quite a bit. Not just because the footage was cool, but because, just all the perspectives while they're showing you this was really neat, because, some of them don't give you all these different sides of both the people that weren't soldiers, but also the soldiers both on Axis powers and on the Allies simultaneously telling you kind of what they were being told, their perspective now versus the war and stuff like that. So it was really neat. I think it was like maybe 6 episodes. It's not too long, but yeah, if you're a war junkie or whatever, like this is definitely worth watching. Mm-hmm. Like I thought it was very well done and worthwhile.
Yeah. Yeah. I was watching, who was it? Shane Gillis is on Netflix again. We're giving Netflix a lot of
we are, yeah.
I love today, but he was talking about if you're getting more and more into World War II, you're dangerously close to maybe becoming a conservative at some point. For guys, young guys.
Yep.
That one was pretty good. That Shane Gillis. That one came out in the summer, but I just caught it recently. And that one's pretty solid to stand up. What other stand up did I watch recently? I've been getting into.
Have you seen Dave Chappelle, The Dreamer yet?
I watched. I didn't know that dropped. That was a secret kind of release drop, and I watched that one. I did watch that one. I've been going back to after the whole Cat Williams going viral thing a couple weeks back. I've been watching some of his stuff. Because he's got a bunch of Netflix specials, Cat Williams does from years, and a lot of strong stuff out there. I did watch Stavros Halkias's stand up that just dropped, But I feel like he's I enjoy him more on podcast. Like, I really enjoy him more on podcast. His stand-up's fine, but and then I just brought up Shane Gillis. I think Shane Gillis is a good podcaster if you hear him on different podcasts. But his stand-up is fucking solid, man. I was just blown away by how good of a stand-up Shane Gillis is. It's funny how he was supposed to be on SNL, and then some like tweets or some shit he said on a podcast 10 years ago
right, yeah.
caught up to him, and then he just – but it's probably for the best that he got let go from that, because like his career now on his own is like – he's considered one of the best current stand-ups right now. I kind of took us on a tangent there, which is what podcasts do. We were talking about World War II. Yeah. So this show is called World War II from the Front Lines. I just kind of stumbled upon it.
It was just something I just noticed that popped up on there when I was on there for some other reason. I was like, oh, that's interesting.
To touch on again on real quick and just for a second, I did watch some of that Blue-Eyed Samurai. And that animation is fucking fantastic.
Nice, yeah.
Like, I don't even think it's a Japanese production, but it's very Japanese.
Okay.
Like, I think it's like an American-French production.
Okay.
But the animation looks as good as anything coming out. Like, it looks as good as anything on Netflix. Like, what was that show? Matt got us into it, which was really impressive. It was...
Was it something robots?
Was it based on a video game?
Was it like an anthology kind of thing?
No. It was a series, and he just fucking was raving about it. And he was right.
Okay.
But it had some of the best animation I've ever seen, because it was just flawless. I'll let you kind of.
Oh, is Arcane?
Yes.
Yeah. There we go.
Yeah.
I was thinking of Love, Death, and Robots.
Yeah, which is also.
Yeah, Arcane. Yes, exactly. Yeah, that was a great. Yeah, that was.
But
a great
the thing with Arcane was that you can say the animation is impressive on different shows, but when every single frame is flawless.
Mm-hmm.
That's what was impressive for me.
But, it really was. Yeah.
I'll let you.
I'll stick with animation. I watched kind of like I kind of used this show like when I was doing dishes or something like that when I watched it first, because What If season 2. I've seen all of them.
Yeah.
The first several episodes were very meh.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't find it as good as all at all. The animation still, like their style they do, it's still solid.
Mm-hmm.
But the stories and stuff. But then I got to episode 6, and it kind of had lulled me a little bit to where I was like, I turned on episode 6, and that's why I brought up dishes, because I remember I was like, oh, I'll do dishes. I'm going to turn episode this on, and I'll kind of watch it as I'm doing dishes. Mm-hmm. So I can follow along. And I didn't get any dishes done, because I found myself getting enthralled with this episode, and I was like, whoa.
Are you talking about the Kauri, the Native American?
Gahorty. First episode with her.
I'm pretty sure that's a brand new character. That's
it is. They just introduced her.
Right.
And, you know, she's a Mohawk Native American, mm-hmm. who accidentally discovers the Space Stone. It was a really interesting story, but they used that because the Space Stone gets... I don't want to rehash the entire episode for everybody, but the Space Stone gets stuck in this lake, and then, you know, the lake gives special powers to the people, and it has like this mythology with the people. And so, you know, you have Ponce de Leon and it been coming over, mm-hmm. and then it kind of gets repurposed as the Fountain of Youth.
Yeah.
So it was really, the story was really well done, and it was very well integrated.
Thought out.
And I was like, oh, wow. Because then I was like, I was like, oh, shit, this show just got real.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so I just sat down and watched it, which is not something I expected to do.
Yeah.
I loved that episode.
Yeah.
She's also in the last episode as well, which was one of the stronger episodes. Mm-hmm. So this character that came out of nowhere.
Did you say it was episode 6?
6.
Was
that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, is most of it spoken in their native language.
That's another thing. Yeah. Isn't that great?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's strong. Yeah. So I mean, if anything, watch episode 6 to the finish, because mm-hmm. I think that's where the What If shine. For some reason, the second half, you know, a lot of times shows will try to start off strong, mm-hmm. but this one just got stronger. It seemed like as it went.
Yeah, I was having a similar conversation with my brother about this second season of What If. I got what I'm usually seeking out of any entertainment, which is like satisfaction. Mm-hmm. And yes, I have critiques with like some of it stronger than, you know, certain episodes are stronger than other episodes. But really, overall, I was satisfied with this last season of What If, which is
exactly. Great. Yeah. Overall, I came away with not regretting watching it. Yeah. But it was, you know, in the beginning, it was just kind of like, yeah, OK, you know, like nothing. No, it was like I wasn't like, oh, well, this is bad. But I wasn't like, oh, wow, this is cool either. So but not until episode 6 was I like impressed by it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and then it has a good solid finish when it, you know, it brings back that Doctor Strange character.
Yeah.
That, you know, it entered. So, yeah.
Yeah. Whatever they call that evil kind of version of Doctor Strange. The Sorcerer Supreme. I forget what they call him, but one thing, too, that I was pleasantly surprised is that Captain Carter is a fucking great Marvel character that I would have never expected, like, being a Marvel fan from, like, a kid, like, reading the comics and everything. And then the MCU movies coming out and then them using Haley Atwell, like, so well for that character. I would have never guessed I would have become such a fan of that character.
Mm-hmm.
She's great. Like when they kind of stumble so much with like characters like Captain Marvel with Brie Larson, which I wanted to like because I like that character from the comics, and I've seen Brie Larson in enough stuff where I know she's a good actress. I know she gets shit for her personal kind of comments and stuff, but I don't get wrapped up in fucking the, you know, I try to separate the artist and the art. And when I wanted to like Captain Marvel, and then it just, the Captain Marvel stuff didn't come off as strong as I wanted it to be in the movies. But like, I would have never guessed, Nebula. I know that first episode of this new season had Nebula, on an episode just to herself. That was kind of a bland episode, but
it really
like,
was, yeah.
But overall, Nebula from the Guardians of the Galaxy movies all the way through Endgame, like, had a great kind of arc of growth for that character, who's like a D-list character in the comics, even a B-list character in the movies, but like gets a great story, like development. And I like that character. I like what Karen Gillan's done with that character and what they did. And then also Haley Atwell as Captain Carter, or just Peggy Carter in the movies, like. What a great character that gets like a natural kind of story arc and growth. And like, I'm a fan of those, like not expecting to become a fan of those characters. I like how it has worked out over the course of the MCU, but yeah, good call on What If season 2. I think we're going to get another season this year. I think.
Oh really?
Like towards the end of the year, I think.
Okay.
So, what else you got there, man?
I'll pull a video game out because I haven't in a while. So we ended up with a MetaQuest 3 over Christmas.
Okay.
There's two Star Wars games. I think Vader Immortal is one of them. I want to do that one after this. But we downloaded Tales from Galaxy's Edge. And let me tell you, it was interesting because I didn't have a lot of experience with VR, like the modern VR gaming. Mm-hmm. Remember Virtual Boy? That's not even close to what we do now. Yeah, that's stupid compared to what we have now. And man, like I was like, oh, they have Star Wars stuff. Of course, I put that headset on for Galaxy's Edge, and it was like being thrust. It was like I became a child instantly, nice. Like being thrust into Star Wars child fandom, because it's like, oh my god, like I'm now standing on a cargo freighter from Star Wars, looking out, being able to look out the windows and like pick things up and like push buttons on the console, and I was like.
Wow.
I've never done this shit before. This is impressive.
Yeah.
And then I'm picking up a blaster and I'm like, yeah, it was a cool experience. By the way, if you're not, if you're a little older and you are not used to VR gaming, careful of motion sickness.
Oh, yeah.
I don't usually get motion sick on, rides and stuff, but I know as you get older, you're more prone to it. But after playing that game for a while, I started as like, ooh, I think I'm getting a little motion sick. And I think maybe like 45 minutes in, mm-hmm. I was like, huh, maybe I ought to take a break here, mm-hmm. take this thing off. But man, it was really fun, really cool. And I do hear Vader Immortal is actually better. Mm-hmm. So I look forward to once I complete this game. But yeah, I mean, the VR, Star Wars VR is so cool, like to be able to kind of immerse yourself into that world a little bit. And MetaQuest 3, it's a really cool headset. What I didn't realize with the most recent one is that it has a camera on the outside. So there's certain games where it will actually use your actual room environment for the game. So you can be standing in a room and it will it'll find walls and boundaries. Mm-hmm. And there was this game that I played that where you shoot aliens and they were literally coming through the walls. So you watch your walls like peel away, mm-hmm. like holes are blasting the walls. And then outside the walls is like this extraterrestrial planet looking thing.
Oh, cool.
So and then they're coming through and you're shooting them. I was like, yeah, pretty cool. And then, it also utilizes that when you set your boundaries for when you're walking around and stuff, if you exit the boundary, it'll show you in the game. And once you leave it, mm-hmm. You leave the game and it'll pop your environment up. So you're not walking into stuff.
No.
So it has that little extra safety thing where you're not walking into who knows what in your room when you get too caught up in the game. So yeah, it was a pretty awesome experience. So kind of my first. I know this tech's been around for a while, but a little bit of my first experience with it. And I've come away pretty impressed.
Yeah. You start getting too wrapped up in it. You take it off. You walk out. You start trying to use the force.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. Like, And my oldest son has downloaded a game too. I think it's like a beta version, but I can't remember what he said it was called. But it's not like licensed or anything, but mm-hmm. you're basically Spider-Man.
Oh, cool.
So you can shoot webs out of your hands and swing from buildings and climb up walls and then people will like robbers or whatever can pull a gun and you can like hit them with webs, pull the gun and you can fire the gun and kill them. You can kill them too.
Yeah, just like Spider-Man.
Oh, exactly. It was like, first time I like shot the guy in the head, I was like, ooh.
Yeah.
That's not very superhero-like.
Right. You know, I played with my nephew. I went to visit my brother and his family, and my nephew had me play the new Mario game, Wonder, I guess is what it's called, maybe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A beautiful fucking game. Mm-hmm. Good Lord. Yeah, I was like, wow.
Every game now, Mario gets to turn into a new kind of, like the elephant is new in
this
one. Yes, I
thought it was really cool. Yeah. I was trying to look up, because I've been like, for little art projects and stuff, just trying to get inspiration from like Mario and the animation in Mario. And I was trying to find like every different version of Mario. So you get the raccoon and there's other ones too. Mm-hmm. There's an elephant. But
he's been he's been a cat and a frog.
Yes, right.
Tanuki.
Yeah.
Yep. He's been a lot of different things.
But and I like the evolution. Like that game seems to like really push the world like further. Like the little what do they call those? The plants that will eat you and stuff like that.
The piranha plants?
Yeah, like they'll start singing and shit like together mm-hmm. and stuff. Like just extra, just making the world more.
Mm-hmm. And you're in a whole new environment basically.
Yeah,
it's
a
whole new kingdom of
you can go. And stuff, you can like transport it to the tubes, to the background and then to the foreground. And
yeah,
to the mm-hmm. like it's a great evolution of the. Of the world, because I know years back, I don't remember which console it was, but this is like fucking 20 years back probably, where they try to make it more 3D environment, which they still make those types of games, but
mm-hmm.
I think the Mario games that I like are the more 2D.
The more of the side-scrolling ones.
Yeah, side-scrolling, and that's what this is, except you can transport to the background or the foreground. But yeah, a lot of fun, and just beautiful to look at, yeah. Do you have anything else for Crossing the Streams? I have one more thing, but I'll
go ahead.
Since this will be 10 years of Mind Grenade of the podcast, I've been trying to, and I have been doing this, putting Spotify playlist like links into the show notes, you know, the podcast show notes where I've got all the information for this episode. I'm going to put in my I'll curate a playlist on my Spotify that has 200 songs, and I keep it capped at 200 songs. And I've been curating this for the last 10 years or so. And when I add stuff to it, then I'll have to take stuff off. And then I just kind of like just maximize the quality of the playlist, I guess. And I've titled it Bottled Lightning, Lightning in a Bottle playlist. And I'll have it in the show notes, the link to it. But it's a lot of the stuff that's on here is stuff that I've brought up over the years on the actual podcast. And it's all the kinds of stuff that I've been, you know, Gorillaz, Broken Bells, Metric. Mm-hmm. There's Ween on here.
Nice.
There's Beastie Boys, Rage Against the Machine. It's from most every genre. It's from most every decade. I've got stuff on here from the 60s, 70s, 80s, and up till now, up till last year. Run the Jewels, White Stripes, Faith No More. I mean, all kinds of shit on here. Metallica is on here. Let's see. You know, watching Scott Pilgrim Takes Off, I added a song from there, from that show that I'd never heard before. So that happens a lot. You know, what was that show? Silicon Valley on HBO.
Mm-hmm.
That show I would listen to and then get stuff off of there.
The exiting credit music.
Yeah,
yeah, it was
exactly.
Very unique. And
yes.
Cool, yeah.
Whoever was picking that music really was on point. There's a TV. Again, I have to give Matt props because he got me into Cyberpunk 2077, whatever that anime show that was on Netflix. The intro music to that made it on here. It's Franz Ferdinand, This Fire. That is very effective. That's how I find a lot of really good music. What's the show on Netflix? Not Netflix. What's the show on HBO with the comedian that you got me into? It's got where he's a hitman that's wanting to be an actor.
Barry.
Yeah. On there, there's a couple. I got a couple songs off of that show. I can't think of the name. Whatever that song. Journal of Ardency, I think is the name of the song. That's a fucking great song that made it onto this. So, it's just funny how when I go looking for specifically for music, like to add to any playlist, I always have a hard time. But if I just like relax and just wait for the songs to come to me, I can just be watching a TV show. I can be at a coffee shop somewhere and the music overhead, something, my ears will perk up and be like, what is this? And then I'll find music that way. I think it's called Journal of Ardency. Mm-hmm. Let me see here. Yes, Journal of Ardency. It's by a band called Class Actress. And I got that from the very first episode of Barry. Again, at the credits at the end. Mm-hmm. Somebody, whoever's picking the music has good taste. And I will have this playlist called Bottled Lightning in the show notes. So if anybody's interested, there's 200 songs on here. You're going to have to, I mean, not have to, but the chances are you're going to like something on this playlist. So I'll put that out there.
Yeah. I love discovering music and TV shows. And sometimes like when they use it well, it adds to the song because it contextualizes it a little bit where it like adds a little bit to the music where you feel like, yeah. So yeah, it's cool.
Yeah.
You know, speaking of music, Green mm-hmm. Day, as we're talking, Green mm-hmm. Day's new album Saviors comes out on the 19th, which is this Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Amazon has, they do this thing called Amazon Music Live on Amazon Prime.
Mm-hmm.
They have one that's Green Day. It's a little concert that Amazon, I think, promoted. You can watch, and it's this, like, it's like high def. Like, I don't know if it's 4K, but it looks really good.
Huh.
And you're like kind of in the audience looking up at the stage really close, and it's well done. It's only like 40 something minutes, I think. So like short form concert, they're playing a mixture of their really new stuff that's going to be on this new album and stuff from Dookie, like old stuff.
Huh.
So you get a little bit of both. So if you're a Green Day fan or you like Green Day, it's not very long. It's worth watching. My wife and I watched it. We enjoyed it. So a little music segue there, but
yeah. This is on where? On what?
Amazon.
Okay.
Amazon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's called, I think it's literally called Amazon Live Music or Music Live Green Day.
Okay. So maybe they'll have other bands kind of.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
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 Cool. All right. We move on from Crossing the Stream, do you think? Or
sure. Yeah. Go else? For it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. So, 2024, new year and new movies coming out this year. It was kind of a disaster for superhero movies, overall last year. It's just a combination of them just putting shit out, and also I can't ignore superhero fatigue. I mean, it's been 20 years nonstop of superhero movies. I was there for it, but I can see that factoring in to what happened this past year, 2023, where like only a couple superhero movies did well. Most of them really bombed. But this year... this year, we're not going to escape the trend of sequels and adaptations, but far less superhero movies. So we got a couple in there, but hopefully they'll do better this year. Because
mm-hmm.
I think, especially the DC stuff this past year, I know they were just pushing stuff out because they were wrapping up the Snyderverse stuff, but... and Marvel's been kind of going through a rough stage too. It's you expecting for people just to show up for any superhero movie. It still has to be good.
Yeah, that doesn't work.
Yeah, you just can't expect it. And, yeah, the Aquaman movie bombed, and just a bunch of shit.
The only two superhero movies I remember like enjoying last year was Guardians of the Galaxy 3,
yes,
which I blew me away.
Yeah,
and the other one I enjoyed Blue Beetle.
I watched it, and I
enjoyed that. That one.
Yeah, yeah. I heard it's decent. It's just it's just kind of getting caught up in the.
It didn't DCEU. Get a lot of talk. And, yeah. And I was like, oh, I'm going to check this out.
Yeah.
And I ended up enjoying it. Mm-hmm. And I think what Blue Beetle does is it's not trying to be a superhero movie.
Yeah.
And I think that it really works for it to where it's really leaning into him and his family.
Yeah.
As opposed to look at the superhero and look what the superhero can do.
Right.
It's very like, I don't know. I'm trying to think of the word for it, where it's not trying to be fantastical. It's just a normal guy with family and all these normal things going on.
Yeah.
And then he just discovers this thing, and it's not this big, long, like learning his superpowers and look at all this.
Right.
And then there's this villain, and there's not a lot of that stuff. So it has a little bit of a different approach that I think makes it worth watching.
Yeah. Story first is really what you have it's the same with the Marvel stuff that's kind of been mid or just fallen flat. Like, you have to have a compelling story. Guardians of the Galaxy, like, you know, the stuff with Rocket and everybody else, like that was compelling. And mm-hmm. I mean, sure, it's a superhero movie, but like story first. And the other superhero movie that I really enjoyed last year was the Spider Across the Spider-Verse movie or Beyond, whatever it was called. That was last year, I think. The Miles Morales sequel.
Oh, Crespo. Yes. Yeah. I should have put that in there. I forgot about that. Yeah.
But again, that's
super good. Yeah.
But again, that's story first and then all the fun superhero shit on top of it. That, I mean, cause it's not that. Yeah. That's why I kind of push back a little bit on the superhero. I admit there's that we have to factor that superhero fatigue in. But if the movie's good, the movie's good, regardless if it's superhero stuff or any other genre, a horror or again, Oppenheimer, if it, you know, based on a you know, on a book that was based on history. Like, as long as the story's good, then genre for me doesn't. I like genre, but the story has to be compelling and good first, and well thought out characters, and
And that's, you know, Blue Beetle, a lot of family and emotion, yeah, and that kind of stuff in that movie, mm-hmm, rather than just
The spectacle and stuff, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm just gonna go down through these, and then you chime in with your thoughts on them. Okay, so in March we finally get Dune Part 2,
mm-hmm,
and watching that in the theater was an experience. The first one was fucking awesome. So
I'm gonna have to rewatch the first one.
Yeah, for See, this
it
one,
it feels like it's been
a while. Yeah.
So
I never read the books, and I'm not too attached to the 80s movie that they made back in the day.
Right.
But I was very, very impressed with Dune Part 1 that, mm-hmm, came out a year or two. It was probably like 3 years ago now, maybe 2 years ago. Denis Villeneuve is one of my favorite new directors. And they added a lot more characters and actors to this new movie. So really excited for Dune Part 2. It's one of those movies where like it seems you have to go watch it on a giant screen. So I think you're going to like this next one. Ghostbusters Frozen Empire.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
It looks interesting. There's like some sort of monster, or like some sort of spectral monster gear that seems like it can freeze temperatures. And you know, there's always been that trope where when a ghost is in a room, it gets cold, kind of thing. So I'm guessing that's kind of where their influence was in creating this, I guess, antagonist in this new Ghostbusters, mm-hmm, movie. So I'm gonna curtail my getting carried away with my expectations.
Right.
But I'm looking forward to see what this is.
Yeah, this definitely, I'm right there with you. Definitely still gonna go see it in the theater because I like the first one. But I am kind of curbing my expectations because it could possibly go off the rails.
Right.
But it's the same, not the same director. I think
it's not Jason Reitman this time.
But he co-wrote He co-wrote this one.
Okay.
So he's attached to it. And because I did like Ghostbusters, the 2021 film. This one also has Finn Wolfhard, McKenna Grace, Paul Rudd, Carrie Coon, Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Ernie Hudson, Annie Potts, they're adding Kumail Nanjiani and Patton Oswalt to this one. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's a couple of great fun ads, yeah.
Yeah, so that's March 22nd for Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. And
I guess I thought I had heard that – oh, my gosh. I know this guy's name. I don't know why. Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. I thought I heard he was thinking about coming out of retirement and doing some stuff, but that never seemed to happen.
Because
he did that commercial with Ryan Reynolds.
But
I thought I had heard that he was contemplating coming out and starting to do some stuff again. Because, I mean, we know like the story, like his wife passed away and he concentrated on family and stuff like that. But
Rick Moranis.
Yeah. Yes. I thought I'd heard that Rick Moranis was contemplating coming back.
That'd be cool if it was like a surprise little cameo.
It really would be. That'd be exciting if you see him on a big screen again.
I love Rick Moranis, but it'd be cool if they had him in this new Ghostbusters movie. Yeah, so that comes out in March. So then also in March, both these movies got pushed up because this Ghostbusters movies and Godzilla Kong the New Empire is also in March, and both those movies got moved up a week. I don't know why. I think something got taken off of March and moved somewhere else.
Okay.
I forget. Maybe it's because of Dune moved around a little bit. But either way, Godzilla Kong, the New Empire. When I watched Godzilla Minus One and then got home and then there was a trailer for this Godzilla Kong movie, this looks like a cartoon compared to Minus One. Yeah. But in a fun way, I love the whole argument with Martin Scorsese going, well, there's cinema, there's movies that are serious movies, Killers of the Flower Moon or whatever, versus an MCU movie and a Marvel movie or whatever. I get it. Like, But I like both. I like.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I like.
There's a place for all.
Yeah. For sure. So Godzilla Kong, The New Empire, super excited for it. And Nomad, I'm not going to give it an A. It's probably going to be. I mean, I want it. I'd love for it to be an A. I find that highly unlikely unless they like, unless the point of the movie is to explain the light source and in the Hollow Earth.
Hollow Earth and Hollow that works. Yeah. And the reverse gravity.
If that's the entire point of the movie, then I might give it an A.
Yeah.
But no, of course not. Really excited. There's this whole thing online with it's people. You're just bringing up the new Green Day album, and it's not out yet, but I'm sure there's already reviews for it, and it's just ridiculous. Well, the Godzilla Kong, The New Empire trailer's got like Godzilla somehow evolves again, and instead of the blue kind of glowing. What do they call those? His plates, his dorsal plates.
Yeah.
When he's going to use his atomic breath or whatever, would turn blue in the movies we've seen so far. Now they're going to turn pink.
I noticed that in the trailer. Yeah.
It's a little surprising at first. It's like, wow, what are they doing here?
Now you can use him as a gender reveal.
Yeah. Right. It's like, hey, wait a minute. Now
Godzilla turned blue. Yeah, it's a boy.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So in this one, he's another gender. And then, people are complaining about that. But like, it's the same director as the last Godzilla versus Kong movie, and I like him. It's the first time since the MonsterVerse has started where they brought the same director back, Adam Wingard, and I really enjoyed the last Godzilla. It's Godzilla versus Kong, and then this one is Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire. So, it's the same director. I really like what he did with the last one, so I have faith in him with this new one.
Yeah, when I saw that, I was like, yeah, I think that's the right decision is to do the continuity of having the same person. Yeah.
Yeah. And he really went really hard into the making it very neon, like the color tone in the last one. So it seems like he's going further into that with this one, with the Godzilla having the pink kind of dorsal plates and stuff. I heard him in an interview recently where he was saying that the reason he did that with the last movie, adding so much neon and bright lights like that, is because like he essentially he's trying to capture the feeling of what it was like growing up in the 80s, going to a Toys R Us and going to the toy section with the action figures and the bright colors, everything just kind of capturing your attention.
That's the decade when you say neon, that's the decade.
Yes, right. Yeah. So that's how he grew up getting into all the stuff into now.
Makes a lot of sense.
So, super excited. There's a shot in one of the last TV spots for this movie where it's Godzilla, but he's not glowing any colors. But he's inside the Colosseum in Rome. And it looks like he's in the fucking Colosseum at Rome. People are complaining about CGI and stuff on these TV spots or these trailers for movies. It's like, man, they're probably working on the CGI to the very last second. And plus, man, I don't know. I've brought this up before in the podcast. Like, it's got to be really bad for me to start complaining about CGI. You'll hear me more talk up really good CGI and then complain about bad CGI because it's got to be really, really bad for me to be like, what the fuck?
I'd rather have a really good movie with borderline CGI than a really good CGI in a bad movie.
Yeah. So,
because the Godzilla movie that came out in, what was it, like 99 or 99?
Yes.
That was actually some impressive special effects they did. Movie not so good.
Exactly.
Yeah, so,
yeah, great example. Yeah, great example. So that comes out, in March 29th, Godzilla Kong, The New Empire, stoked for that myself. And then right after that, Furiosa and Mad Max Saga. It's, George Miller coming back. He did, Mad Max Fury Road, which is fucking such an amazing movie. He did all the Mad Max movies so that when he came back to do the one with, Charlize Theron and, Tom Hardy, like, I was like, wow, it's the same director that did the old ones with Mel Gibson. He came back and like, I was blown away by Mad Max Fury Road. It was fucking awesome.
It was a really good movie.
So he's got this new one that comes out May 24th, and it's got Anya Taylor-Joy, which is one of my favorite new actresses. George Miller directing, and it's Anya Taylor-Joy playing a young Furiosa, which is the character Charlize Theron.
Yes.
And Charlize Theron was the star of that movie, even though Tom Hardy was playing Mad Max.
Oh, of course. Yeah, she absolutely was.
But
yeah,
she was really the star of that movie. She's like, that was her movie. She has the arc and everything, and then wins at the end. I mean, spoiler.
I couldn't agree more, and I love Tom Hardy. Yeah.
Yes, and exactly. And Tom Hardy was fantastic in that movie, mm-hmm. but he's really just kind of like, he's really the supporting character to her character. And there's a trailer for this prequel out online that shows that it's just going to be high octane.
Nice.
So, yeah. And then right after that is Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes.
Mm-hmm.
That trailer looks pretty amazing, too.
It does.
That's CGI that I will mm-hmm. go out of my way to praise. Looks pretty awesome. Do you like the previous, like the last whatever three movies that have
come they're,
out?
Yeah. They're excellent movies. They're solid. Andy Serkis. Yeah.
Doing the motion capture. Yeah. It's amazing. It's a CGI when you're looking at it and you know it's not real, but you're like, this looks so real.
Mm-hmm.
You're super impressive. So, got high hopes for that one. All right. The main event, the only Marvel movie coming out. No, there's two Marvel movies, but the only MCU movie coming out this year, Deadpool 3, with the return of Hugh Jackman as Wolverine. And there's all kinds of rumors of old Fox Marvel characters coming, like Ben Affleck as Daredevil.
And why not, right?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Now that they've got the property, why not?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know what to say about this movie other than that, it'll probably,
it's going to be rated R, right? I mean, they're going for it. Yeah.
It'll be the first, rated R MCU, I guess so. Hugh Jackman, Ryan Reynolds. It's the same director that did, the last couple really good Ryan Reynolds movie, Free Guy.
Free Guy, yeah.
And, what was that one? The Adam Project on Netflix.
Yeah,
it's that same director.
Okay,
so the director and Ryan Reynolds have a good thing going. So,
so they kind of paired themselves up, like a Tim Burton and a Johnny Depp.
Yes, exactly, exactly. So, super excited for Deadpool 3. I hope it it'd be awesome if this movie resets the MCU somewhat to kind of get it back on track, because the last couple of phases have been kind of wonky. So it'd be great it'd be awesome if Ryan Reynolds was responsible and Hugh Jackman were responsible for kind of getting things back on track for the MCU. Deadpool 3 comes out in July 26th. Speaking of Tom Hardy and Marvel movies, Venom 3 comes out, but that's a Sony Marvel movie.
Yeah, right, yeah.
And not a lot out on that movie, but that's supposed to come out in November. I like the silliness of the Venom franchise, movie franchise.
The movies have just been okay.
Yeah, they've been okay, but like
the his interaction with Tom Hardy's interaction with the Venom is what really makes it fun.
But that's so on point with the comic.
Mm-hmm.
It's not to be taken seriously. It's to have fun with it, and I like that Tom Hardy can be a serious actor, like very serious, and takes it serious. And he takes this serious, but he realizes that it doesn't have to be taken so seriously. Like, you have fun with it, and he's great in it. So we'll kind of go full circle, because another movie that comes out in November is Gladiator 2, Ridley Scott, Denzel Washington. Mm-hmm. Pedro Pascal is also going to be in Gladiator 2. It brings back a lot of the people that were in Gladiator, the original Gladiator, except for Russell Crowe, because does he make, I don't even remember if he makes it out of that movie, but it's not Russell Crowe. I think it's his son, I guess, is the star. Like, okay. They'll have an actor playing an older version of his son from that movie in this movie. But it's Ridley Scott, Gladiator 2. It's one of his biggest movies.
When I first saw that, I thought it was fake. Because yes, I didn't even realize. Right. I was like, what? Gladiator 2? No.
That just sounds like it. Yeah.
Yeah, because all these years later, it's like, yeah. I was like, what? But no.
Ridley Scott, Blade Runner, Alien, let's see, Prometheus. He's done a lot of, I mean, he's...
He did the TV show Taboo with Tom Hardy.
Yeah, yeah. Ridley Scott, Alien, Blade Runner, Gladiator, Black Hawk Down, Kingdom of Heaven.
I forgot Black Hawk Down was his.
American Gangster with Denzel.
Yep, that was a good movie.
Prometheus, The Martian.
Mm-hmm. He's got an impressive
filmography. Films, yeah, The Last Duel, Napoleon just recently, and Gladiator 2 coming out. Coming out in November, so it should be pretty exciting. He's one of these directors with an impressive filmography. I listened to him on an interview saying that even with his track record, movie studios will still like be like, oh, I don't know. Whenever he comes up with a new idea for a movie, they're like, I don't know if that's going to work. It's like, man, it's always a gamble.
Or, yeah.
You know.
100%.
Tarantino's last movie that he's getting ready to direct is the main focus is a movie critic, which doesn't sound that exciting and doesn't sound that sexy as a movie premise or a Tarantino movie.
Right.
But it's Tarantino. So he's earned enough credit in Hollywood that you should just let him make a movie. And Ridley Scott's that way. Not everything Ridley Scott's made is Gladiator or Alien or Blade Runner.
Yeah.
But for the most part, the guy has a great track record that it's just kind of crazy that you can be one of these guys. You can be Martin Scorsese or Christopher Nolan, and people, Hollywood will still question you, you know. Nolan probably less so because, he's the guy. He's the director of the moment. But it's just funny how somebody like Ridley Scott can... will still get pushed back. And then the last movie on my list here that I'm excited for is one of... I discovered it doing this research for this list here. Is a movie called Nosferatu. And obviously a vampire kind of thing. It's Robert Eggers, who did The Northman. Remember we watched The Northman?
Yeah.
That movie was like probably my favorite movie that year. But it's him... And he also did, what else did he do? Robert Eggers, The Northman, The Lighthouse. And then he also did the movie The Witch with Anya Taylor-Joy. So he's a very interesting director, and that's why I added it to my list here. And that comes out on Christmas of this year.
Yeah, he's Nosferatu. A good choice for trying to bring back a very old character.
Yeah.
Because you could bring... Yeah, because he's shown that he can do some very unique dark cinematography, so it'll be interesting to see what he does with that.
Yeah. Says his films are noted for their folkloric and mythological elements, as well as his thorough efforts to ensure historical authenticity. Yeah, because when I was doing the research for The Northmen, like they really went deep with the folklore and all the mythology and stuff like that. So... again, I added that just because I saw the director. There's a handful of the movies that I've just named off where it's like the director is what's getting me to be excited about it. So, all right, man. I think that's it for the 2024 Mind Grenade film preview rundown. You got anything else to add to the podcast before we wrap it up?
No, we're good. I'll save it for next time.
Cool, cool, cool. All right. So I really appreciate everybody, supporting the podcast over the years really means a lot to us here. So we'll call it an episode. So for all things Mind Grenade, like a feed of the podcast, my art gallery, they can all be found at mindgrenadestudios.com. So thanks for listening. Thanks for subscribing. This has been Hector for Jason and Denzel Washington saying so long, and we'll talk to you soon.